QST, QST. This is Tom Fry, KF6Q, acting as net control for the Tech Tuesday Net at 1900 hours local time on the Big Bear Amateur Radio Club repeater. 147.330 megahertz, offset of 600 kilohertz, and a PL of 131.8. This net is conducted every Tuesday at 1900 hours, conditions permitting. This repeater is solely owned, operated, and maintained by the Big Bear Amateur Radio Club. We wish to thank the BBARC for the use of the repeater for this net. The purpose of this net is to provide and promote technical knowledge, education, and information of amateur radio, a gateway to spark interest in various aspects of amateur radio communications. Before I begin, is there any emergency or priority traffic? Please call KF6Q. Hearing none, are there any bulletins or announcements for the net? Please call KF6Q. Alrighty, only announcement I have is for anybody out there who's ECS member, please get a hold of myself or Art for the bicycle race up here to assist Tracy in that, and that will be on August 6th. I'll get it out there. Okay. Anyway, appreciate all that. If you can get in touch with me, then we'll get a list going. Also, some of the workshops, we will have one coming up. First part of August will be our basic first one of the season, and it will be for building a Yagi on site. Topic for the evening will be continuation of lightning protection for amateur radio stations and what we can do to prepare and possibly avoid any critical damage there or harm to ourselves. All right, but first we'll go ahead and get started here with the roster. First on the list is WB6CLZ Mike, wherever you are out there.
Well, we are down here in the OC in Placentia, Tom. Good evening to everybody on the net. WB6CLZ will be standing by for the net.
Okay, Mike, glad to have you out there. And how about WB6CIN, Cindy?
WB6CIN here.
All right. Well, I'm up here at Sugarloaf. Enjoy all that nice warm weather that I left behind. KA6CIA, George. Nothing heard out there. How about KE6RJ, Harry? And nothing heard. Now, here's a guy who might be out there, AF6ZJ, Guy, in Rosemont.
Present and accounted for, and good evening to the net.
Okay, Guy, we'll check in KJ6JKZ, probably right alongside you there. let's see here, KJ6HZS, Mike.
And Tom Manette, this is KJ6HZS, no traffic.
Okay, Mike, glad to have you out there, and we'll check in K6EKX, if he's listening on the repeater there, your dad. How about KJ6FIL, Mike, in Redlands?
Good evening, Tom and the group. What a great weekend it was up there in Big Bear, that's for sure. KJ6FIL.
Okay, Mike, glad to have you out there, and glad you could enjoy the weather up here over the weekend. It was pretty neat. AF6VH, Bob. And I haven't heard. How about KJ6KDL, Jim, Sugarloaf?
KJ6KDL here with KJ6KDK, and yes, you probably heard me Monday night, but Rosemary and I are on for August 6th.
Okay, roger that. Appreciate that, and thanks for helping out that way. All right, W6GZI, Frank.
Evening, this is W6GZI.
Okay, Frank, think I got you out there. Little QRM there. KI6IQA, Kelly. Nothing heard. K6GVL, Ron, in Green Valley. Yeah, nothing from Ron this evening. How about AD6PL, Harold, in Riverside?
Evening, AD6PL.
All right, Harold, glad to have you out there. How about K6LCS? Clint in Aruba Valley.
With news about the satellite aboard the ISS, stay tuned. We'll give it K6LCS.
All right, Clint, looking forward to that in a few minutes. This is KF6Q on the Tech Tuesday Net on the Big Bear Amateur Radio Club repeater, 1900 hours every Tuesday, conditions permitting. W6AWL, Art. And I haven't heard, how about W6JLM, Judith? And nothing heard there. How about W6KMM, Kenneth? And nothing heard. KI6OHN, John, are you out there? And nothing heard. K6YNW, Chris.
XYNW.
All right, Chris, glad to have you out there. Appreciate that. W6KBC, Gary. Nothing heard. KD6LAN, Bill from Boulder Bay. And nothing heard. K6HAL, Rudy. Nothing heard. Let's see here. Let's see if we can get Adam from Garden Grove. KJ6BCK. Adam, are you out there? Nothing heard. AE6CK. Victor, Santa Fe Springs.
Good evening, Tom and the group. This is Alpha Echo 6, Charlie Kilo. Love it.
All right, Victor. Glad to have you out there. Appreciate that from all the group here. Let's see if we have KE6VHM, Frank. And nothing heard. How about KA6ROD, Rod from Moonridge? Nothing heard. KJ6DBS, Leon. And nothing heard. KB6LTY, Christy.
KB6LTY.
All right, Christy, glad to have you out there. And I think it's W6WW. Got him checked in here too. AE6TV, Hans. All right, nothing heard. Let's give a shout out there for K6TUX. Are you out there? Nothing heard. How about NQ7RD, Rick and Corona?
Good evening, and all on the net. Glad to be out here, NQ7RD.
Okay, Rick, glad to have you out there. Appreciate that. Good deal there. Any other people who would like to check in as a guest, please come back to KF6Q. All right, this is an open net, and directed net, but an open net. So anybody wants to check in at any point in time, jump right on in there. Let's see. We're going to hand it over to Mike, WB6CLZ. Mike, what is happening out there on the DX report?
Well, on space weather, Tom, it looks good. We've got a sunspot, space weather's reporting a sunspot number right now of 127, with a solar flux index of 102. Just to give you kind of a reference, the high sunspot count for this cycle 24 that we are in at this time was back in March and April of 153 with a solar flux index of 155. Anyway, but that doesn't mean anything. Same old thing. I just got off 17 meters. I worked with 10 watts, Charlie Oscar 8 Lima United Eduardo in Cuba, which was kind of good, with a pretty good copy, 5.9 plus, and he also gave me a 5.8 with the 10 watts. So, you know, things are okay, but still not where we would like to see it. Hopefully things are getting better, but it looks like, you know, we're about stuck in a rut for a while anyway. And, you know, we got to get that solar flux index. There's a good number of some sunspots, but not large enough to really do with the ionosphere what we need done for ham radio. And that's my story, and I'm sticking to it. Back to net control. This is WB6CLZ Placentia.
Hey, Mike, appreciate that. And, yeah, it's a varying thing from time to time. Anybody else out there with any DX information or contacts like to come back to net control and share with the group here?
I just wondered, did he say the solar flux was 150 K61W?
Okay, Chris, appreciate that. Anybody else out there, please come back.
You want me to answer that?
I'm sorry, go ahead. Yes, please do.
Negative. I was talking about the maximum back in March and April. That was the solar flux was 155. No, as of right now, the solar flux index is only 102, and we have a sunspot number of 127. Back to net control.
Okay, Roger that. And don't know if we have WO6B out there. Tom, are you out there this evening? All right, don't hear him out there, but he was sharing with me, actually for quite a few days here in the last week, 6 meter, good contacts on 6 meter, which is part of the VHF band, still pretty cool, making contacts up in Idaho and hearing a lot of good signals out there from beacons way over in Kansas, so even the 6 meter is coming in and out of there, but a lot of good opportunities there. And everybody out there who's a technician class license holder, 6 meters is open to you, as is part of 10. So good way to get out there and kind of work some DX if you want to do that. So, all right, we're going to now hand over to Quint, K6LCS, on our ham satellite report. Go ahead, Quint.
K6LCS, good evening. Our FM birds are working marvelously. AO51, SO50, SO67, AO27, FM voice sounded great this past week. The ISS data is coming down, and we have some news on the amateur satellite that's on board the ISS. Russian ARISS delegate Sergei Semberov has announced that they will be charging the battery on that amateur satellite late July, next week, in a test tentatively set up from on July 30th from 1915 UTC to about 12 to 1400 UTC on the 31st. We have a tentative excellent pass. This is tentative for us at 2:18 in the morning on Sunday, July 31st. They're going to hook up a 2-meter antenna to it while it's still inside the space station and test it. Break for a sec. Deployment, possibly August 3. I know you've heard that before, and you've heard that since April 12th, but their new EV, the next EVA for the Russians is EVA, extra vehicle. particular activity, number 29, tentatively set right now for August. So prepare your rigs. Get ready now. You can work this with as little as an improved antenna on your handheld, on your 2-meter handheld, listening to it, and information on how to hear it, what to listen for, and the frequencies is all on the website worksatellites.com. Worksatellites, all one word, .com. And I hope you folks are enjoying the Bob Heil podcast, the video podcast, Ham Nation Twit Network, twit.tv/HN for Ham Nation. That's Twit, This Week in Tech, twit.tv/HN for Ham Nation. We'll be doing a satellite show on August 2, right before hopeful deployment of the ARISS-AT-1 satellite on August 3. Tech Tuesday, Tom, that's all I've got. Some exciting news. It's going to be a great next week and week and a half. K6LCS.
Okay, Quinn, appreciate all that information. That's great information. And, they'll get that satellite launched one of these days, right? Well, anyway, we're going to continue on with our discussion of lightning protection. And we're going to be pulling a lot of this information from an article from June 2002, QST. It was basically about three issues, three consecutive months. Very good information. We did a lot of preliminaries last week, did not actually even get into the article. So we will hopefully be well into this one. This article is by Ron Block, KB2UYT. I believe that's Y. My spectacles are treating me right here. Good information here. And Mike, I'm going to go over to you real quick. Did you get a chance to look through this at all over this last? Actually, we've had 2 weeks, but we're going to start out here with some of the information. And what can you share out of this on the first page of our article?
Tom, well, yeah, there is a lot of information. Like Tom said, it's a three-part article, and each one is, gosh, I don't know, 4 pages or so. Very interesting, though. A couple things that I did notice in the highlights that I wasn't aware of. The average thunderstorm is approximately 6 miles wide and travels at 25 miles an hour. I found that to be interesting. I didn't know that they traveled that fast. I guess can travel that fast. And the other thing is they say the area of imminent danger in front of the leading edge of the cloud. I was always under the impression that, you know, the cloud's over there and we're kind of safe. But up to 10 miles from in front of the leading edge. I found that very interesting. Those are a couple things that I just noticed right off the first page. Back to Net Control, WB6CLZN.
Yeah, and that's interesting to know because, as we know, we might be thinking about disconnecting some antennas or maybe shutting down some equipment because we see the storm coming. Definitely want to get it done before it even gets there. So that's a good point there, Mike. 25 miles an hour is basically, I guess it depends on the storm. A lot of storms are, you know, do travel between that and 30 miles an hour, somewhere in that range. But that's a good thing to know, too. Might give you an idea if it's where it's at, what it's hitting, and how far away it is. And if you got a good idea when it's going to hit you. Maybe reset. One thing here to bring to the attention of everybody out there, there are, of course, many stations out there, commercial stations, which are excellent targets for lightning. I guess we have a lot of those as examples of how they can survive a strike, even a direct strike. So obviously we don't want that happening to us, and obviously we don't have unlimited budgets. And if you do have insurance on your gear, that's great. ARRL offers very good insurance for that. But we do want to try to stay safe. No sense of being on the air or risking anything. We are not commercial stations. We are amateur stations. And we might as well go ahead and get off the air when we can. anyway, Mike, good point here. Have you ever heard of somebody, a person themselves, getting hit with lightning? And I think Zoe Trevino has been hit like twice, maybe even more. And they're still alive. What's up with that?
It's all on the hit. It's all on how you get hit. It's how much current hits you. It's your position in ground and such. I'll give you an idea here. It says the average peak current for the first strike is approximately 18 kiloamps, 18,000 amps. And 98% of all strikes fall between 3 kiloamps and 140 kiloamps. That's a lot of current. It only takes 5... and kills you, and kill you. So, I mean, they were very lucky. And I've never known anybody that's been hit by lightning. I've heard stories of relatives in Wisconsin and this and that, but never actually known anybody. But, you know, you hear about it all the time. And I'm looking for a number here of how many people actually get hit by lightning every year. And I don't see it right off the top of my head here. Paging through that, but I know it's quite a few. It's in the thousands, and I guess they were just lucky, Tom.
Comment.
Yeah, Harold, go ahead. Comment. 86PL, go ahead.
Yeah, I was hit by lightning up in Vernon back in the early 80s.
And obviously you survived. You're still here. You want to share with us exactly what happened and how it happened and maybe how to ever keep it from happening again?
Yeah, the advice everybody gives you, don't be the tallest thing out in the open space, is the best advice. Go find someplace. I was tarping a truck down, and I was up 13.6 up in the air on top of the truck with, in hail and rain. I was ankle deep in rain and hail on top of the truck. Lightning hit a building. I was sitting in the middle of a parking lot. Lightning hit the corner of a building next to where I was at. Knocked a piece of the concrete off. It ricocheted over to my truck. Hit me. And, three guys that saw it said that started at my feet. I could feel it. It was all I got was a tingling out of it. And a real funny feeling, but it wasn't, I mean, you know, it didn't burn me or anything. But they said it was just a blue glow all around me. Started at my feet, went up over my head, and lasted for a couple of 3 seconds, and then it just died. And about the time it died off, I went down a rope and hit the ground. And I went back inside and let the stuff on the trailer get as wet as it wanted to get. 86 feel.
Okay, Harold, I know that you're, and you of all people would know this, that you're a very lucky person that whatever it was not stronger or more potential there. And I guess we can kind of make a comparison here with lightning strikes. In automobile accidents, I mean, you can have the little fender bender, or you can even have something where it's just a little scratch. And then you can have a catastrophic rollover crunch that you look at that and say, it's amazing anybody walked out alive. Lightning strikes into the thousand or kilo amps is obviously going to vaporize a lot of stuff. So that's pretty much a given. And a lot of them are that way. I'm going to say, like, Mike, real quick for replay there, what was the average of current? And just one more time.
Tom, they're saying the average peak current for the first strike, usually there's 3 to 4 impulses or multiple strikes per lightning strike, but they say for the first strike, the average is 18 kiloamps. That's 18,000 amps. And then they go on to say 98% of the strikes fall between 3 kiloamps and 140 kiloamps. That's a heck of a lot of current. Think of your main breaker at your house is 100 amps. that's a lot of current.
KSXQ here, Tech 2. Tuesday on the Big Bear Amateur Radio Club repeater every Tuesday, 1900 hours, conditions permitting. And one of those conditions that we did back away last year was under severe thunderstorms up here. So far, so good. You know, at my 100 amp service in the house, which is probably the average service out there, I guess, imagine blowing every breaker in the panel, even to get to that point or close to that, and you're talking thousands and thousands of times of that, definitely a lot of power out there. Seeing that the basically that leader channel, if what we're talking about there, gets heated up to over 50,000 degrees Fahrenheit, not 50 degrees, not 5,000, 50,000 degrees Fahrenheit in only a microsecond. And that's where we get the big boom. This is superheated air, and of course, that hot expanding that quickly is what where we get that huge, huge boom. If you are nearby, you'll see the flash boom is immediate. Have experience on that. Anybody else out there, any experience in being close to a lightning strike?
I've got a little time.
Okay, Mike, go ahead.
I think it was year before last out in Irwin Lake, about, it was probably about a block away, hit a telephone pole, actually telephone pole, power pole, and took out the transformer. And, I mean, the flash and the boom were almost instantaneous, I mean, being that close. I mean, I was actually scared to death. That's just the most awesome power that I had ever been around. And I've seen some action in Vietnam and such, but very awesome power.
Roger that. Yeah, it's definitely, it'll wake you up. Anybody else out there with anything to share of a strike nearby like that, please come back to KF6Q.
YNW.
Romeo Delta.
Yeah, bye, Al.
Okay, Roger that. We got three. Let's in order. Let's take YNW. Chris, go ahead.
Okay, not exactly the same thing, but it's related. We have property in Michigan, and my grandmother and I were in at the cottage, and a ball about 9 inches, electrical ball about 9 inches, rolled around the living room, and eventually dissipated. But it was just charged from somewhere. We left that little thing alone. K6YNW.
Well, that's got to be probably one of the weirdest things in the world, and it'd be amazing to ever see something like that recorded, but it all happens so fast. Rick and Corona, NQ7RD.
I hope this falls in the line of getting hit. Playing with a neon sign transformer when I was a teenager, one of those making those Jacob's ladders where you had those two parallel wires in a V shape about 2 feet high. I grabbed a hold of it when it was off, and my other hand turned on the switch, and it literally knocked me to the ground, curled up in the fetal position. It just kept, hitting me. It was around 5,000 volts. I forgot what the milliamps were, but it was fairly low. My other hand was free enough to hit the off switch, and that was all she wrote. Got a good burn mark on my hand. I was on a carpet on concrete, so I'm pretty sure it was going through that too. But like I said, I was literally curling it up, and I was going into shock after. So laid down, elevated my legs, and rested, and I live to tell about it. NQ7RD.
Definitely an eye-opener, and I know those transformers. I've got a few of those, and I used one to power the primary side of a Tesla coil we built in high school, and was just incredibly, incredibly, I guess you'd say, dangerous. And Mike, real quick, we're going to go over to FIL here in just a second, but Mike, if you could, look up there and see if you can find an approximate voltage. These bolts are traveling, what, maybe half a mile, quarter of a mile vertical? I'm not sure. Maybe if you could get that, Mike. In the meantime, we'll go over to KJ6FIL. Go ahead, Mike.
I can remember being a little tyke way back in Kansas. I was standing in my grandparents' kitchen looking out the window. Right directly above me was a wagon wheel with five light bulbs in it. Directly behind that was our stove, in which it had a light in. I was standing there, and all of a sudden there was a flash, boom, real quick. Three lights in the wagon wheel went straight out, and the light behind me blew out, and my hair stood on end, and I just tingled like hell. It felt like it passed just over my head.
And another incredible occurrence where the person, Mike, obviously, you're still with us, and that's got to be very close. That's got to be incredibly close. And what we're trying to build up to here is obviously how does this affect ham radio and what we're doing with antennas, which tend to be huge lightning rods out there. We need to understand the intensity to truly, I mean, we all know, oh, it's very bright, it's very loud, but the actual intensity of a lightning strike is probably one of the greatest forces of nature. Mike, were you able to come up with anything on what kind of potentials, voltage potentials we got going on there real quick? WB6CLZ.
Not quite as high as the national debt, but Wikipedia is saying a billion, the average lightning strike, the potential is 1 billion with a B volts.
1 billion volts. Okay, we got 120 in our outlet. We're talking about one with, what, nine zeros behind it, volts. That's the average strike?
That's what they're saying.
Which is, if you're understanding how far that has to jump, that spark, and we're talking into the kiloamps of power. Mike, if you could, too, maybe you can do a quick search up there. I know they've compared that energy to how many homes in the United States or whatever could be powered for a year. Maybe you could look that up while we're on that to really understand what all happens in a microsecond of time, and a microsecond meaning literally a millionth of a second. Incredibly powerful. As I'm going through this article here, let me reset real quick. And I'm sorry, I also, anybody else out there has anything to share? I guess I better make sure we get everybody involved here. Please come back, KF6Q.
Quick comment.
Yeah, go ahead, comment.
Yes, Benjamin Franklin, I think he lucked out. He could have... you know, ended his tenure at that time with that famous experiment, K6YW.
Yeah, you know, and I'm not really sure exactly what happened and what he did. I know the famous fable, story, cartoon, adventure, or whatever, looking at some kind of a huge amount of force like that, I just really, yeah, I could see Fry Franklin instead of a Ben Franklin, but anyway, so awesome that he got us started on the road electricity, and he still is with us. Let me reset. You know, and actually, as we look at the force of nature that's going on there, and I think we have here, I'm reading off this, that the typical, what they call rise time, which is from no current to maximum current, basically about 2 microseconds. And if you were to look at our RF signals and radio ham technology, it's about 140 kilohertz, which is really not a lot. So we're not talking about a huge amount of RF frequency-wise in how fast it happens, but that's still pretty quick because we're in real time here, and that's definitely awfully quick. Mike, any other information there real quick on powering a city? Please come back, KF6Q.
Yeah, well, I can't guarantee the accuracy of this, but this is what I'm reading. General power, one lightning strike has enough energy to light 150 million light bulbs. Okay, that's what they say. Now, they don't say whether they're CFL or incandescent, but we won't split hairs here. And 95 people die from lightning yearly in the U.S. That's the average. Also, one single thunderstorm can release 400 million liters of water, from the rain that's created. And one storm can discharge enough energy to supply the entire U.S. with electricity for 20 minutes. Let's see, what else have we got? And any given minute, any given time in the world, there's approximately 2,000 thunderstorms that are going on. One more. A large Midwestern cumulonimbus cloud, the thunderstorm clouds, can tower 20 to 25 kilometers. To give you a reference, Mount Everest, the tallest mountain in the world, is 8.8 kilometers high. So that's just some facts that we threw out there.
Okay, Roger that. Well, I know that as we now, I think we've covered where the power of lightning is incredible. This many thousands of amps of current, billions of volts of electricity. We're going to kind of just rehash over one thing we were talking about last week. Disconnecting your coax and throwing it on your desktop, and you're safe. I want you all to think about this, of having thousands of amps of current terminating the end of that coax on your desktop. Okay. Anyway, yes, your radio probably, if it doesn't get cooked by the heat, would survive. The primary reason of disconnecting your antenna in that fashion is basically from static charge buildup, the electromagnetic pulse that you get, EMP, things like that. But for true lightning protection, we need to go one more step. And Mike, are you familiar with those like little devices they make? You can kind of put them in line with your coax, and that's outside by the antenna. Forget the name of them. Really neat. I'm not sure if they work after they've actually burned up once, but it's actually to direct that lightning strike away. Are you familiar with any of that?
I don't know if you're talking about polyphasers. I'm not really sure. I know that OTL last week brought those up. I think Alpha Delta makes them. Or polyphaser makes them for Alpha Delta or something. One more quick thing, though, before I hand it back to you. Basically, what we're doing is we know the awesome power of this stuff, and we put up towers, we put up long wires like that, and we're thumbing our nose at Mother Nature saying, hey, come get me. Whereas, instead of, because that's the nature of ham radio. You know, we've got to have high antennas, we've got to have long wires and such to get it, and basically that's the best attraction for lightning there is. But I think you're talking about a polyphaser, Tom.
Exactly, polyphasers. And essentially, Mike, from your knowledge and experience there, what does the polyphaser do so that everybody else out there will understand this?
I actually never used one. I've never had one in my hand, so I can't say firsthand experience. But my knowledge is they're basically a fuse that opens up and sends the what is left of the strike to ground. But I'm gonna have to get myself up to speed on it. I've actually never used a polyphaser. I disconnect my antennas. I ground my antennas, and I'm knocking on wood as hard as I can. I have never had an issue with that. So let me read a little bit about these polyphasers.
Okay, Roger that. And because the polyphaser is probably the first major step that we know of in ham radio. Anybody else out there, anything to add on that before we move ahead? Please come back, KSXQ, on polyphasers. Okay, roger that. I guess you could, a real simple explanation would be also, and I've seen this done, or I've seen this demonstrated, of using a spark plug, something that would arc to ground. There's a lot of little things to do. Primarily, though, if you can disconnect that antenna, tie that coax outside of your house directly to ground, probably one of the safest things. And towers. Yes, we all would like to have something up on our tower or a wire up in the tallest tree we can find. And I think Harold was talking about being the tallest conductor around is not a good idea. So we don't want to tear all our stuff down. So I'd say the first thing would be with a tower, lower the tower as much as you can. Try to ground out your stuff so at least that way if you do attract something or some sort of discharge, keep it out of your house. Any other comments on that itself right there? Please come back. KF6Q.
AJ6PO.
You go ahead, Harold.
Two things, Tom. Number one, don't get too big a hurry and drill your hole down to concrete and drive your ground rod into the ground underneath it, because if it gets hit, you just create a huge bomb. And number two, there is an article, I don't know where I read it now, I think it was World Radio, but I'm not sure. And the advice that they gave there for grounding your tower was to run at least 8 number 6 stranded wires in parallel off of your tower and to a good 8-foot or 10-foot long ground rods, and that way it'll siphon it off and reduces the amount of electricity coming off of that and just separates it out and reduces it so it doesn't just, I guess, blow up the whole ground around your tower. But said at least 8, and as many as you could put in or could afford, 86 beyond.
Hey, Harold, that's a very good point there, and we just kind of touched base on that. A lot of people out there, if you are not familiar, concrete has a lot of water in it, even after it's dry, has air pockets and water. Concrete, when it is heated, suddenly will explode, and the shrapnel is concrete. So I think, Harold, what you're saying there is what we need to have at least keep our ground rods for that tower away from the concrete that's holding up the tower. Get them out there a ways, and I think you were saying about 8 of them, more the better, at least up to a point. Spread them out there, get them away from the concrete, let them go in the dirt. How far would be, going to say, an average of maybe 4 feet, probably the further the better, and have these number 6 wires that go to those ground rods, have them start up the tower a little bit kind of to coax that strike, should it happen, and fan out. Harold, very good point. Anything else to add?
You go to that Keith station on the air. Yeah, parallel those wires, not serial. And if you get a chance, it's really interesting. If you see them starting to bore the hole to put up a cell tower, go over and watch them as much as you can and watch how they ground that sucker. Because, I mean, they got number 6 wire. It's bare wire going everywhere, all underneath it, all out to the sides, even the concrete block walls that they surround some of them with, they ground those off. There's a huge amount of number 6 wire goes into the ground, and it goes deep. So, the longer rods you can get down in the ground, why, the better it works. And if you have trouble getting it down, some of the rental places have an electric cap that you put on top of the rod and this little jackhammer and just drive it right on down. I watch them do fence posts with it, and they work wonders. AD6PL.
Yeah, roger that. And just to add to that, as far as driving those ground rods in, WB6PBZ and myself, Ray, worked on his house a little bit a couple years ago. Used a jackhammer like that, put some ground rods in, and just FYI, it will drive them. Even it'll split a rock. We knew when we hit a rock, and then we split the rock, and then it kept on going. So it's a good tool, a good way to do it, and make sure that you get it in there using a sledgehammer. But I guess if that's all you have, even a sledgehammer will work. It's going to take you a little bit longer. So yeah, and that's another thing too. Obviously, we're looking at number six wire, even if we had eight of those. Let's see, Mike, I'm going to hand it back to you real quick as an electrician. Certified electrician, what is number six wire rated for?
Okay, I had to pull that one off my head. Let me think. Number six. Number six should be rated for 60 amps, Cindy? I think it's 60 amps, Tom. I don't have that right off the top of my head. I don't, I'm a lighting guy anymore. I don't get into that stuff. I will tell you that my tower, my little puny crank-up pole over ground rods, 4/8-foot ground rods, and we're using number 1/0 wire in that going from the ground and attached to the tower. So we use a little bit bigger than number 6. Always the biggest you can find. I had partial roll around here, so bigger is better.
Okay, roger that. Yeah, and I do have, I believe it's number 1 or 1/0 that I have had for years, and now I know why I kept it. Obviously, that tower I got from Long Beach is going to make it probably the best grounding wire. Although we're looking at, say, 8 wires at 60 amps, that means those 60 amp wires, number 6 wires, 8 of them in parallel. So it's going to bleed off just under 500 amps, and we've got kiloamps. So I guess the only thing that's going to save that wire is the fact that it's in the microsecond bleed off that heat. So we're doing the best we can with that to try to bleed that off, but obviously if it was continuous, it would probably vaporize that wire, wouldn't you say, Mike?
You get a direct hit, it would probably vaporize a 2/0 or bigger. Depends on how many it's got, but yeah, I would say so.
Question.
Okay, roger that. Yeah, go ahead, question.
Yes, is this done from the bottom of the tower? I assume it is, K6YNW.
Yeah, Mike, I'll let you add to this. And essentially, what you want to do is actually come up from the base of the tower. There's a reason for that. Let's say we have a tower and we've got the tower base in concrete. We don't want that concrete getting hot. We don't want the metal attached to the base getting hot, that's attached to the concrete. So we usually, I'd say as a rule of thumb, maybe 6 feet up, maybe a little bit more. So we attach a little bit away from that. It's definitely going to superheat, but you want to be up off the ground level of that somewhat, and then kind of do a, not a direct 90, but kind of like a sweep away. That much current going in one direction wants to keep going in that direction. So a good gradual sweep and have those tied to the ground rod. Mike, anything to add to that, please come back. Or Chris, YNW.
Also, sweeping bends, you don't want any sharp 90s in them if you can get away from it. You want the current to flow through that, and lightning tries to flow in straight directions. So you want to make as gentle as bends as you can on your grounding.
You know, and this is kind of a common sense thing, but I got to say it. If you're going to set something up like this or a tower, good common sense thing that we sometimes overlook, don't even think about that. Try to keep this whole thing set up away from any propane tanks, away from any combustibles such as a stack of firewood, away from things like a possible natural gas line coming in. You You got to think about all these things. I know a lot of times we're trying to get a tower up in the air, we think, like, well, I just can't wait to talk to Europe. Please take time, plan your location carefully. So, because that actually would just create another huge problem. Anyway, anybody else out there, any comments or questions, please come back to KF6Q.
Got another comment.
Yes, Harold, go ahead. 86PL or KF6Q.
Yeah, whenever the lightning hit me, if I would have taken a stroke that hit that building, I would be talking to you. But I saw it hit. I saw the big hunk of concrete come off the building, and I saw it head toward me, but there's nothing you can do. I mean, you just stand there and enjoy it. And I was not too happy with the guys that were laughing whenever I got into the building. But anybody that wants a, to me, is the penultimate authority on lightning and what to do about it is Polly Pazer's website. Just type in PollyPazer.com, and NASA hired them to do all the research that they possibly could on lightning and how to avoid getting their facilities and their equipment pumped by lightning. They had maybe a bunch of people in one of those space shuttles getting ready to go up or something. So that's a good resource, 86 Beyond.
Okay, Roger that. And that would be also a very good helpful item there, too, like I say, just for eliminating static buildup. And I would like to mention, too, that we possibly have a new group listening in tonight from the group we tested Sunday from the Big Bear Hospital. They are not licensed yet, but they were going to listen in on their radios, listen-only mode, till they get the call sign. So hopefully if you're out there listening, hope this is helping everybody out there, and welcome to the group Tech Tuesday. Good group of hams here. Well, anyway, we've covered quite a bit, and we've covered a lot of territory this evening. Appreciate all that from all the help. Going to probably wind things down a little bit. We will continue. This is all from the first article. This would be the June 2002 issue of QST. And it might even be posted on ARRL's site for public information. I really hope it is. I don't know. But anyway, it has been reprinted a couple of times with permission. But anyway, we're going to move on to, which will be probably the July issue next week, and cover more territory. Anyway, in closing, I'm going to say, Mike, is there anything you could add? And we'll take some questions here in just a second. Go ahead, Mike.
Basically, all I can add is take this stuff seriously, guys. Not only will it kill you and burn your house down and all kinds of other bad and nasty things, but, you know, follow the weather. You see those little wispy white clouds that turn into those nasty, dark, black-bottomed thunderstorm clouds. You know, when you hear reports that's going to happen, before you go to work, before you leave, disconnect everything and ground it, and you will be a lot happier.
Hey, Roger that, and I know that in the past there have been times when even just power lines have got crossed up and thrown a surge and wiped out equipment, you know, that wasn't surge protected. So we're talking about just probably thousands and thousands, much more of that. Definitely can cause damage, and it's why we're going to spend some time going over this. Always good to try to be safe. Every time this year we try to do this, and I think we're making progress here. Anybody else out there before we close the net with any questions or comments or suggestions, please come back to KF6Q.
LTY.
Yes, Christy, go ahead.
Hey, I just had, this is KB6LTY. One piece of information or fact, little trivia that I can't quote the source, but I think at the time it sounded like it was a legitimate source. You have a likelier chance of getting hit by lightning than you do winning the California Lotto. Anyway, back to net control, KB6LTY.
Wow, okay. And I think also getting hit by an asteroid falls into that too, before you'll win the lotto. Appreciate that information. Anybody else out there, any comments, questions, or suggestions before we close the net, please come back to KF6Q on the Big Bear Amateur Radio Club repeater.
YNW.
Yes, Chris, go ahead.
Yes. Well, Christy says, I think it's about equal for them. Going to say, you know, if you're going to bring the... win the lotto, you can also win a lightning strike. K6YW.
Okay, roger that. And probably, depending where you're at, is obviously when we start putting aluminum up in the air and wires up in the air and towers up in the air, it's like going out and buying maybe 10,000 lotto tickets. Your chances just got a whole lot better. Okay, so not that you're going to get hit by lightning, but I'd say probably that makes a big difference. Anybody else out there in closing, any comments or suggestions or questions, please come back to KF6Q.
Comment.
Yes, Harold, go ahead.
Yeah, to show you how sudden and unexpected that your stuff can get hit, in the last 10 years, I know two repeaters in this area, the Hammond repeater and the Clara repeater. Both of them got hit by lightning. Hammond had saved and scraped and bought all new equipment. They moved it up off the hospital up on the side of a hill up there about 1,300 foot up, so it was really doing good. It was up there a week or 2 weeks, and lightning hit. The first lightning storm went through, and bang, the first stroke hit. Just fried the whole works. And I was sitting here in Riverside and watching the lightning and thinking what a great show it was, and I see this big bolt hit Santiago Peak, and I thought, well, I bet they got Clara, and sure enough, I turned my radio on and Clara was dead. It was for about 2 weeks till they got up there with a whole bunch of new radio equipment, so it can hit anywhere unexpectedly at any time. 86 PL.
YNW again.
Okay, Harold, thanks for that. Yeah, go ahead, Chris.
Yes, Keller was knocked out, and also 14682 on Onyx Peak was taken out by lightning in addition to those. K6YNW.
Oh, well, so it has been hitting around here, and if you're up in the Big Bear area, take heed. If you're out in the middle of the desert near the highest point around, take heed. If you're driving anywhere, take heed. Be careful. I guess it's really just something that is going to happen. We are going to get lightning strikes. They are going to continue on. So we'll do the best we can to be prepared. That's the best we can do. And that's better than doing nothing at all. Trust me, any of these things is better than nothing. All righty. Anybody else out there in closing, please come back to KF6Q. Questions or suggestions or anything at all that you would like to share.
B6CLZ.
Yes, Mike, go ahead.
I don't want anybody to make the mistake thinking that a direct hit is all that is going to do you harm. There are really high currents induced in antennas. If anybody has a dipole and a flash bulb or the old flash bulb that they used to use, your antenna and leave it in position during a lightning strike, and 9 times out of 10, it'll flash that flashbulb. It shows you what kind of current may be induced in that antenna.
Yeah, roger that. Yeah, and that's, like I said, that's primarily one of the best reasons to at least disconnect your radio when there's stuff going on like that. If you can possibly, I know my feed comes in on the second story level, I'm going to have to work on that. I've got to work around that and get some way to get that down to the first floor level and then feed it back upstairs. I definitely need to get that feed fixed. But if you have a feed or something that's away from your house, that's the best place to disconnect, though. Anyway, anybody else in closing, please come back. KF6Q. All right, well, I want to thank everybody out there this evening that's participated and shared information. This is what Tech Tuesday is all about. And if you're listening in and you're just one of the people who likes to listen in and learn stuff, I hope we've helped you out. I think we all can just, there is no end of talking about precautions and safety. You know, and this is the time of year that we definitely need to focus on that. So it's, we have all those storms out there. I think we have a whole bunch more coming in next week. We, I guess, averted a few up here this week, but they're coming. So, all righty, QST, QST, QST. This is Tom Fry, KF6Q, acting as net control for the Tech Tuesday Net, closing the net at 2,000 hours, returning the repeater to normal use. And once again, I would like to thank everybody for participating this evening and hope to see you next Tuesday at 1,900 hours.